join me in giving a third church welcome to Senor Rodriguez.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for inviting me to this activity. My name is Jesus Rodriguez, as she said, and I always apologize because my English is not the best, but I'm going to try to work hard with that today. I always also, starting to talk, I encourage people to be as sharp as they want in the question and answer session. So I prefer to have like sharper questions than easy questions. So you can be as sharp as you want when we enter the questions and answer session. I just bring you a slideshow with information about Venezuela, some general information. I'm going to talk a little bit about recent events in Venezuela. So basically, this is like a very general fact sheet about Venezuela. I mean, you can see here the map, and we are in the north side of South America. We share borders with Colombia, Guyana, and Brazil at the south. Our population is close to 30 million persons. Our area is close to 1 million square kilometers. Our unemployment rate is 6.5% by December 2010, and we're a little bit proud of that because we were also caught by the recession in these past two or three years. Our GDP, as 2010, decreased in 1.4%. Our inflation for 2010 was 27.2%, so that was high, and it's one of the highest inflation around the world. But I'm going to show you, and in the media, I believe that exaggerate a little bit that, and I'm going to show you some slides that demonstrate that we are not as bad as before. Our international reserves are close to $30 billion. We were declared by UNESCO in 2004 Free Literacy Territory because of a social program that we initiated called Mission Robinson with the help of the Cuban. Of course, we speak Spanish, and we have like 30 or 36 different aboriginal languages in the country. We were ranked in the Human Development Index. That's an index designed by United Nations to measure economic development, but also social developments. We were ranked in the 61st position in the last release of that index. And we dedicate 11.3% to the pay of our GDP to the payment of the foreign debt. And like 10 or 12 years ago, that figure was close to 33 or 32%. So we have been trying to reduce the weight of the foreign debt in the economy. I want to mention you some achievements. I mean, things that we are proud of in Venezuela. We reduced the public debt in 50%, as I was telling you. We, in 2008, had an increase of 24% in the agro production. We have one of the highest minimum wage in Latin America. It's close to $600. Our unemployment rate, as I mentioned you, was 6.5%, and we had like for decades or years an unemployment rate between 10 and 50%, so we are very proud of reducing the unemployment rate to the levels that we have right now, even though we were caught in the middle of the recession for the last, I don't know, like two or three years. This is something very important. We increased the number of pensionists in Venezuela in 400%. I'm going to show you a slide in a couple of minutes in which you will see is how fast we increase the number of pensionists, and also we equalize the amount of the pension to the minimum wage. In order to avoid, and the minimum wage is adjusted every year because of the inflation, so the pensions are not affected by the inflation because we adjust every year the minimum wage. So the inflation do not
destroy.
destroy the amount of the pensions. And we also, talking about pensions, we incorporate housewives as possible recipients of pensions. And we also incorporate fishermen and I mean, I'm talking about fishermen and peasants, those ones that were not in the
factories,
in the official established system, so economy.
By being a citizen and contributing to the society.
They have to demonstrate that they were peasants. They have to demonstrate that they were fishermen. But if they feel some sort of requirements, they can receive their pensions. And the same thing happened to housewives. What else? We had a reduction of 30% in infant mortality. We dedicate, I believe that this is for 2009, 4.2% of our GDP to health and 7% to education. And I always stop here because you hear in the media that we dedicate a lot of money to weapons and things like that. And the truth is that the most important areas in our budget are health and education. We had a reduction of 13% in the gap between rich and poor. I believe that we might do better, but at least we have been reducing a little bit that gap between rich and poor people. We increased the number of people in Venezuela with access to water from 80% to 95% in 2009. So right now, 95% of the population have access to water, in comparison with 80% that we have like at the end of the 90s. We tripled the number of students enrolled in universities. We have 25 out of 1,000 students enrolled in universities in 98. Right now we have 75 out of 1,000. So we tripled that number. And I have to tell you that most of the universities in Venezuela are public universities. I mean, they are free. We also have private universities, and those ones that wants to be in private university, they have the right to also be in private universities. So this is the main slide. I want to talk a little bit about the historical background of Venezuela, because maybe some of you do not have a clear idea of what has been happening in Venezuela recently. I just wanted to know, do you know about the coup d'etat in 2002 in Venezuela, for example?
Yes.
Who of you know about that?
Well.
Okay, so we have a, and the Caracaso, you know about the Caracaso?
No.
Okay, so I have to talk a little bit about that. We in Venezuela, our last dictatorship ends in 1958, when students and popular movement get rid of Pérez Jiménez, which was our last dictator in 58. Then we enter a period, a political period, that we called Pacto de Punto Fijo. In that period, we had like a bipartisan system, very similar to the system that you have here in the US, at least that we copy it, actually. So we basically have like two parties sharing, alternating in power for 40 years until 98, when President Chavez was elected. In 1998, we had elections and President Chavez was elected, and he took office in 99. So, but before the election of Chavez, at some point, even though we are an economy with a huge amount of income because of the oil exports, we entered during the 80s a very dramatic economic situation because of the bad administration of previous of those governments. And the poverty rate, the foreign debt, and all economical and social indicators got crazy. I mean, the economy and the social indicators get worse and worse. And in 1989, there was like a big social explosion, riots, that we call El Caracazo. It's like people just went to the street and took everything was in front of them. And that happened not only in Caracas, that happened all over Venezuela, but we call it El Caracazo because it starts in Caracas. So the decision of the government at the time was to send the troops to the street and kill people, basically, to stop the riots. They start shooting at people. And some people estimate that we have hundreds of deaths. More than 1,000 people died in El Caracazo. And there were some part of the military, there was some part of the military that was sent to shoot at the people that was against that. And among those was Hugo Chavez. And those riots happened because the government at the time, which was the government of Carlos Andrés Pérez, start a package of measures indicated by the International Monetary Fund that lent us money because we were broke, basically. So we start liberalizing the economy, privatizing things, following all the recipes from the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and all those guys, and people explode. And because of El Caracazo event, we had the attempt of coup d'etat in 1992, led by Hugo Chavez, while he was in the military. So in 1992, Chavez, among other military people and some civil movement, they tried to overthrow President Carlos Andrés Pérez's government. And they did not succeed. And they were caught and put in jail. And actually, Chavez stayed in jail like for 2 or 3 years until he received a presidential pardon. And after he received a presidential pardon, he entered into the political race that allowed him to run for president in 98. And that's when people elected. So that's very briefly show you what happened in Venezuela between the 50s and the 90s. So the most important promise of Chavez during that presidential race in 98 was to draw a new constitution with the people. And that was fulfilled. In 1999, we had our new constitution, and the new constitution was discussed all over the country in open spaces, with all political parties participating in the debate article by article. And then when we had the draft of the Constitution, we had a referendum in which people decide if they want it to be approved or not. And in 1999, people vote for approving the new Constitution, and that's the Constitution that we have right now. I believe that is one of the not very common constitutions around the world that has been approved by referendum by the people. And we introduce in that constitution the concept of participatory democracy. And the concept of participatory democracy, the way we see it, goes beyond the concept of representative democracy. I mean, we do not discard the value of representative democracy. We still use it, but we introduce new elements that we believe strengthen democracy. And that's what we have. That's why we call it participatory democracy, because we allow people to participate. So we keep using the tools of the representative democracy, I mean elections and all those things, but we incorporate things that other countries have, but we didn't have at a time, referenda, for example, and we have different kind of referenda. We have consultative referenda. You have an important issue that you want the whole population to approve or not. You can have this consultative referenda. If you we have recall referenda, any elected official after the half of his term can be recalled. Not only the president, a congressman, a governor, a mayor, any elected official can be recalled. And a lot of people criticize that because they say that was a waste of money and time, but I believe that has improved democracy in Venezuela because we were used to have politicians that promises a lot of things, and they didn't have, after they were elected, they didn't have to present, to fulfill their promises. So when you push in front of them the possibility of being recalled, if people are not happy with them, you somehow are forcing them to do what they promise. So that's the way I see it, at least. So we incorporate the popular law initiative. I mean, usually the executive branch and the legislative branch propose laws to be approved, but we incorporate the possibility of people. When you have enough signatures, enough people behind to present a law, people itself can present a law to be approved. What else? We incorporate the concept of communal councils. The communal councils are basically, some people associate them to the CDRs from Cuba. You know the communal, but I believe that they go beyond that, because in those communal councils we are somehow organizing the people or pushing the people to organize themselves in order not only to discuss problems among their communities, but also to propose solutions to those problems. And those solutions represent presenting projects. And those projects sometimes request money. And governors, mayors, and the federal government have to provide funding to those projects that are presented by the communal councils. So that was the first approach to the communal councils, and we have like thousands of communal councils all over the world, all over the country, and we are right now trying to, I mean, we create a new concept called commune, which goes beyond the communal councils because it is like an association of different communal councils. So basically, if you are in a neighborhood or in a small town and have enough, I believe that is like 25 families in cities and 25 families in rural areas, and 40 in urban areas, you can organize a communal council. So basically, we introduce that concept in the constitution. We introduce different concepts of organizing to produce. So we incorporate in the constitution the concept of co-ops and co-management. And we right now are talking about EPS, that are empresas de producción social in Spanish. But in English should be something like social-led enterprises, maybe. I don't know. I believe that that's the best translation for that. Social-led enterprises. And those enterprises are production units managed by communal councils. So right now we are trying to use communal councils in also in the economic level. So I'm going to talk
factories,
farms, any sort of. Actually, we have been nationalizing a lot of companies in recent years. And some of those companies has been transferred to EPS. So it's excellent. I believe that the concept is excellent. But anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. Around the communal councils, we, as I told you, we are talking right now about communes. And a few months ago, we approved the Federal Council of Governance. The laws that create the Federal Council of Governance, which I believe is going to be like the, I call it like that law means the creation of the communal branch. Because this institution, this instance, is going to avoid the discretion that sometimes local governments or governors of the, or even the federal government put in transferring funding to the communal councils. Right now, because of the creation of the Federal Council of Governance, communal councils are going to have the right to receive funding also from this instance. They are going to be able also to receive funding from the local and the regional and the federal government, but they have right now a wider possibility to receive funding without the discretion of any elected officials. So I believe that that's going to be easier for communal councils. We started in 2003 a mass campaign of social programs, basically with the help of Cubans. I have to tell you that in 2002 we had the coup d'etat, and in 2002 we also have an oil strike that basically impact Venezuelan economy in more than 50% of a decrease in our GDP. The effect of those political events have the same effect that a war have in a country. I mean, the decrease in our GDP in 2002 and 2003, in 2002 was like 7%, and in 2003 was like 8%. So when you add that, you're gonna have more than 15% of decrease in our GDP. And we were broke basically in 2003, and the only government that helped us to start Misiones was the Cuban government. And we initiate Mission Robinson, which is that mission that the results of that mission allow us to be declared free literacy territory in 2003. That's a social program that eradicates illiteracy in Venezuela in less than 2 years. Then we start Mission Barrio Adentro, which means that we, with the help of Cubans, we put like thousands of doctors all over the poorest neighborhoods in Venezuela, all over Venezuela. And that's part of the first level of the health system. I mean, that's, I don't know how you call it here in Venezuela, but we call it in Spanish atención primaria.
Primary
care, exactly. And those doctors somehow provide that care that most of the Venezuelan population didn't have before, especially the poor people. And that represents like a dramatic and very important improvement in the quality of living of a lot of Venezuelan population. Then we start Mission Barrio Adentro too, which is with somehow attacks the second level in the health system, which is the level of the level in which you practice exams and tests and x-rays and those things. So we start creating different clinics all over the world. We have more than 1,000 all over the country. We have more than 1,000 clinics right now in that level. And the third level is a level in which we have been having more difficulties because of the neoliberal programs implemented in the 80s, the centralization programs, most of the hospitals in the previous healthcare system were assigned to cities, to municipalities. And the government tried at the beginning to connect the whole mess of isolated hospitals all over the country, and we haven't been able to solve that. So the decision that was taken a few years ago was to not forget about those hospitals, but yes, the government decided to create a new range of new hospital and build new hospitals all over the country because it's going to be easier and faster. So, but I have to recognize that this in the third level we still have a lot of problems. We have Misiones in the cultural level, in the sport level. I'm going to show you some slides about that. And recently, talking about recent politics, we had regional elections in 2009, in which we have control over, like, we have in Venezuela like 360 municipalities, and the party that supports Chavez wins like 260 of those municipalities. And that's like 70% or something like that. And we had control over, I believe that 19 out of 23 governors. So right now, the PSUV, which is a party that supports Chavez, have 19 governors. And the other four were controlled by opposition forces. In 2010, last year, I believe, we had like elections for the parliament, and the media says that Chavez lost that election or something like that, but the reality is that we have control of 60% of the National Assembly, and the opposition forces have 40%, and that's what they have been having traditionally. Happens that in the last parliament election, the opposition withdrew, and we had control over like 80 or 85% of the parliament before these elections. So some people are playing with those figures and saying, look, Chavez had control of over 85, and right now they have control of over 60, but that doesn't mean too much because we have control over 85 because the opposition withdrew in last election. So, sorry. So basically, we initiated since 2006, I believe, a big nationalization campaign. We create this communal branch, and we're going to have presidential elections in 2012. I'm going to try to go faster to show you some slides that I bring. You can see here how the poverty level has been, you know, moving in Venezuela. You can see here, 89, we had a poverty level close to 42% and an extreme poverty level close to 16%. Right now, we are talking in 2010 about 7% in the extreme poverty level and 26% in the poverty level. So we reduced poverty level almost in half and almost the same scene to the extreme poverty level. You can see here how Venezuela has been evolving in the Human Development Index in recent years. You have here 95, 2000, 2005, and 2010. And going up in the Human Development Index indicates that you are improving not only in economical terms, but also in social terms. And the Human Development Index is something that is not, it's an index that is not created by the government. It's an index that is designed and published by United Nations. Because the slides are in Spanish, but they were relatively new and I wanted to show you. You can see here, we believe that the Human Development Index is a good index, but we believe that the best index is the Gini Index. And that index is also designed by United Nations, and it measures inequality and how the distribution of wealth happen within a country. So if the index is close to zero, you are in good shape. If the index is close to one, you have to worry. So you can see here how we have been moving around the Gini index. So we have been moving steadily closer to zero, and we are not going in the opposite direction. You can see here for benchmarking, you can see here how other Latin American countries behave in the Human Development Index. We are here, and you can see traditionally Argentina had a great Human Development Index, but I believe that these numbers were affected by the crisis in Argentina in recent years. Uruguay is another Latin American country that have a great Human Development Index, and we are right now have better numbers than Uruguay. That doesn't mean that we have been solved all the problems in Venezuela. I just want to show you that we have been improving in a lot of areas in Venezuela. You can see here how the enrollment in universities is in the country. We are in the second place in Latin America after Cuba in the numbers of students enrolled in universities. And you can see here the rest of the Latin American countries. This is Mission Robinson, the numbers of Mission Robinson and Mission Robinson Dos. I forgot to tell you that when we start Mission Robinson, the illiteracy program that I mentioned to you before, we initiate Mission Robinson 2, in which those who were teach to write and read had the possibility to enroll to finish elementary school. And then we create Mission Robinson 3 to allow them to finish high school. And that's, I mean, those numbers in the enrollment of university students doesn't come out of the blue. Those are results of those policies that we initiated in 2003. And the creation of new universities, new public universities. We have been creating new public universities all over the country. And you can see here how many people has been, you know, participated in the Mission Robinson 1, and this is for Mission Robinson 2. This is Mission Rivas. This is a program for capacitation to work, and we have been also having like 600,000 Venezuelans participating there. This is the inflation rate. I was mentioning you that we have a problem with the inflation rate, but you can see here how the inflation behaved before Chavez and how the inflation has been behaving after Chavez. You can see here that in 95, I believe, we had an inflation only in 95 of 100%, and we have like a crazy moving in inflation values before Chavez. And you can see that we have been trying to improve. Of course, we have problems, and right now we have one of the highest inflation in the world, but we are way better than what we had before in terms of inflation. You can see here how the unemployment rate has been behaving in the country. And you can see here that the 6.5% that I mentioned you before in unemployment. This is a number of pension, and this is great. I mean, you can see here that we had like 387,000 Venezuelans receiving pensions in 98, and right now we have 1.7 million. And that's an important number, especially if you take into consideration that we are only 30 million Venezuelans. And meanwhile, the rest of the world is trying to exterminate the social benefits of people. We are trying to do the contrary in Venezuela, even though we have been affected by the global recession and all those things. This is another mission called Mission Milagro, in which you have like, we have been able to operate off cataracts for free, a lot of Venezuelans and people all over the world. And we have been operated 1.2 million people. Not only Venezuelans, but Latin Americans. Actually, a few years ago, we took one woman from Chicago to Venezuela to be operated for cataracts because we wanted to initiate the program here. But the problems of liaison and the problems of insurance didn't allow us to move there. Yes, I'm going to finish soon. This is the numbers of consultorios. Consultorios populares are the places where the doctors of Barrio Adentro work in the first level of the health system. We have like more than 6,000 clinics like that all over the country. I'm going to show you some photos now. And these are the salas de rehabilitación, centros diagnósticos, and centros de alta tecnología. There are more than 1,000, and also they are part of the second level of the health system, and they are all over the country. This is Mission Barrio Adentro 2. This is one of the modulos of Barrio Adentro. And we have like 6,000 of them all over the country. The medical doctor receives patients in the first floor, and he lives in the second floor. They are there 24/7. People in the Chantitowns in Caracas can go to the clinic 24/7, and they receive attention and medicine for free. And if they consider that they need something else, they refer them to the clinics in Mission Barrio Adentro 2. These are the clinics of Mission Barrio Adentro 2. This is the best hospital that we have been built yet in the third level. I mean, this is the Children's Heart Diseases Hospital in Caracas. And it's a beautiful hospital, and it's a reference. Even the opposition people in Venezuela recognize that, that this is one of the best hospitals in the country. And this is the same hospital. And we receive patients not only from Venezuela, but also from different countries in Latin America. We have been investing a lot of money in strengthening the sport infrastructure, and with the help also of the Cubans, the training of sportsmen all over the country. We have been building new stadiums all over the country. These are some of them. We launched a few years ago our first satellite with the help of the Chinese government. And the good thing about that, I mean, it might not be very important in the US because we started that like 40 years ago, but for us it's our first satellite. And the best thing of that is that when we start the project, we start negotiating with French, with English, and with Chinese. And the Chinese were the only ones that accept technology transfer clauses. The British and the French just want to sell us the clothes package, and the Chinese were the only one that accept training of engineers. And we launched this satellite like 3 years ago, and we are right now in Venezuela with Venezuelan engineers that were trained during the preparation of the first one. We are building our second satellite that is going to be launched like in 2014, I believe. It's going to be launched in China because they have the facilities. But the whole satellite is being built right now in Venezuela by Venezuelans. This is one of the terrain stations of the satellite. We have been spending a lot of money in infrastructure. This is the second bridge over the Orinoco River. This is the project of the third bridge over the Orinoco River. And when I saw it, this is like a computerized model. And when I saw it, I say, okay, it's going to take like 15 more years to finish it, because that's the way we did since in Venezuela. But this is a photo. This photo was took like 2 or 3 years ago. And this is the third bridge already. I mean, the third bridge is being built. And a few days ago, I saw a reportage in Venezuelan TV, and the project is like in half, and it's supposed to be ended in 2004 or 2005. We have been building a metro system all over the country. This is the metro of Los Teques. Los Teques is a suburb of Caracas. This is the metro of Maracaibo. We finished those projects during Chavez government. Maracaibo is the second city in Venezuela in size. This is the metro de Valencia. Valencia is the third city in size. I'm almost there. And this is the metro de Valencia too. This is a railway that goes to Caracas, from Caracas to Cuba, which is a suburb of Caracas. And the railway system has been moving very fast in recent years. This is a photo of one of the projects that connects Cuba with Puerto Cabello, which is the most important port in Venezuela. Conviasa, this is something important because we had like, since the 60s, we had an airline named Viasa in Venezuela. And because of the market reforms that we implemented in Venezuela during the 80s and 90s, we privatized that airline named Viasa. And the Spanish group Iberia bought it, and they controlled that airline like for 1 year. And after that year, they start selling the planes by pieces. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we didn't have an airline anymore. Public international airline. We have like private airlines in the country, but this was the public one and the biggest one. So because of the market reforms, we lost our airline. So President Chavez like retake the idea of Viasa, and he created a few years ago this Conviasa airline. And the airline has been growing, and we have been spending it. And we have actually flights from Caracas to Damasco and to Tehran, and those flights have been in the media a lot because they say that we bring Hezbollah troops to Caracas and we are like building nuclear weapons or things like that. But the truth is that you can be stopped in front of the airport in Caracas, an international airport. Anyone can do that and take photos of the people that get out of those planes And the media start, you know, creating these big stories about Venezuela, but they never show a real proof about the things that they publish about that. We invest a lot of money in military systems, especially because the U.S. banned military exports to Venezuela since 2005 or 2006, I believe. And when a country is in front of that situation, the country have to find alternative suppliers. So we start negotiations with Chinese and Russians, and these are some Sukhois air fighters that we bought from Russia. And the media also criticize us a lot because of that. But these are new hydroelectric plants. 75% of the electricity in the country relies in hydroelectric plants. This is Metrocable. These are like funiculars that are built in the shanty towns and allow the poor people that live in the shanty towns in Caracas to go to their houses. Imagine yourself with like 6 bags of groceries going up the hill to. So we wish to eradicate the barrios in Caracas, but meanwhile we have to provide like some sort of facilities to the people that live in those places, and that's why we create the project. Metrocable is the name of this project. And you can see here, that Metrocable that I showed you is here. This is the map of the Metro of Caracas. But we are building Metrocables here, here, and here. And this one is going to be end next year. We are very proud of our Youth Symphony Orchestra, and that's the result of the big amount of money that the government has been putting prioritizing culture. And basically, we provide free music teaching to poor kids all over the country. And they don't pay a dime, and they start playing immediately. And we have, right now, El Sistema, which is the name of the program, is recognized worldwide because of the quality of the system. This is the way we see the economy. This is in economic terms. This is part of our plan, development plan from 2007 to 2013. We do not believe that we have to eradicate private poverty. We believe that we have to strengthen social-led enterprises, those ones that I mentioned you that are associated to communal councils. We believe that we have to keep some means of production in hands of the state, but the idea is to transfer those means of production to communal councils, which I believe is the whole idea of socialism. But we recognize the importance of having private property, and we have like some share of private poverty property in our economy. And this is the last slide, and it only shows the investment in military systems in different parts of the world. This is a United Nations population figured, and you can see here that we are here, very tiny, and we invest in weapons less than Brazil, Colombia, and Chile, and here is the U.S. So even though we have been investing a lot of money buying new military systems because of that ban that I mentioned you, even though we have been investing a lot of money doing that, we still are far away from Colombia, Brazil, Chile, not to talk about the countries in the north. So that's it. Sorry if I take too long. So if you have questions, I'm happy to. I don't know how.
Would you like? I'd be happy to help you with questions. And if you will indulge me, I'll have the first one.
That's fine.
That's the
she's second.
Benefits of having a mic. My first question is, it's very impressive to hear all the accomplishments, but what's the actual situation with the with your relationship with the United States, and what problems do you really see from that, and what can folks like us do about it?
Okay, the tensions. The tensions with the U.S. has been starting since 2002, basically. Before 2002, actually, Chavez was here in the U.S. in 2001. And he visited New York, and he was in Wall Street and did the whole hammers in there. And he threw a ball in one of Mets game or Yankees game. So there was not too many confrontational situations between Venezuela and the U.S. until the coup d'etat of 2002. After that, Venezuelan approach and the evidence of U.S. involvement, U.S. government involvement in that coup d'etat changed the Venezuelan approach to the relations with the U.S. And of course, the tension has been increasing. And I believe that if you ask me, the worst part of that in recent months is that when I came here in 2005, I was appointed as deputy consul in 2005, there were like two or three news about Venezuela in the media every day. Right now, there are like thousands. You cannot count them, really. Before, we tried to count them. Since 2006 and 7, that's impossible. And we initially, when we read all those news, we laugh. And we see that most of them are manipulation or twists of reality or lies. And you initially laugh of that. But in recent months, we have been starting to be scared because we feel like that's not like a twisted mind trying to say lies just to say lies. We believe that that's part of an agenda. An agenda that is trying to portray us like the worst of the worst. And that agenda is going to facilitate radical measures soon. You know what I mean? You initially laugh when you read all those crazy news about Venezuela, but right now I'm not in the level in which I read them and I laugh. Right now I'm in the level in which I read those news and I start to feel some sort of panic because I feel that they are just trying to build a dossier about Venezuela and just, you know, present it to the US public like, see, this is true. These guys are terrorists. These guys are a threat to the US. They actually are saying in recent weeks that we are a threat to the US in Venezuela. We are only 30 million people. We don't represent a threat to anyone, in military terms at least. But anyway, I mean that's the reality of the whole situation between Venezuela and the U.S. In relation to the bilateral relations, the government-to-government relations, they are worse. I mean, a couple of years ago, they didn't renew the visa to our ambassador in Washington because the Venezuelan government decided not to allow the appointed U.S. ambassador to Caracas to be appointed because I don't know how to say that in English, se entrometió en política interna. Internal affairs. He made comments in the Congress about Venezuelan military and relations with FARC and things like that, part of that campaign. And an ambassador cannot do those things. And Venezuelan government decide not to give him the placer. And then a few weeks later, our ambassador in D.C. didn't receive his visa renewed. So that ambassador was appointed to Spain. So he right now is ambassador in Spain. So we don't have very intense bilateral relations. Yes.
The United States is, the government and the media have very much demonized your country. I want to know, are there government people or organizations that are working together with Venezuela Is there any way to change this? Is there some, and part of Laurel's question, which is still, I'm sure you're going to answer, is what can we do?
Yes, I don't know. I don't feel that I'm able as a diplomat to tell you what to do, but we have like different organizations that help us. There's the Latin American Venezuelan Solidarity Committee, the Solidarity Committee with Latin America. They are very small organizations, but we do things. And there are the organizations like yours and different religious organizations that approach us, and not only to us in the consulate, but in the different consulates of Venezuela all over the US and to the embassy. And there's some sort of connection, but I believe that the best thing that people can do is that, if you ask me right now, to right now there's a campaign in the Congress of the U.S. led by Connie Mack and this Congresswoman Lehman is her name, from Florida, and they are like doing crazy things, saying crazy things, and asking the people, the government, to put us in the state sponsor of terrorism, and I mean, they are very radical, and some people don't believe that they are radicals, but they are having power because they are not right now in control of the Committee of International Relations in the Congress here in the U.S. or something like that. So I believe that's something that people can do. I mean, just reach them and tell them, listen, guys, you are like, I don't know. Not too many, but there are some. Yes, I don't find a name right now. If you wanna, yes. The vice president.
Mm-hmm.
He ran the country from Cuba. He was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sense of what the status of his health is now? And if it should not be good?
I don't have like too much information different than the one that you find in the media, but at least I follow Venezuelan media, so maybe I'm better informed a little bit about that. But basically, Chavez, after a trip to Brazil, Ecuador, and Cuba, he was, they discovered in Cuba that he had this situation in the, he had this pelvic access. And they operate him of that. And then a few days after that, after they practiced biopsies and exams to the tissues, they realized that he had cancer, and he had to receive a second operation a few days after that. And according to what the media say in Venezuela, he is recovering from, I mean, the operation was successful, and he is recovering fine. I mean, I believe, and I believe that the good thing of that is among the progressive forces here in the U.S. and in Venezuela too, there's always a concern about Chavez personalism and the figure of Chavez as caudillo and those things. And I believe that this event which Chavez held in recent weeks has been showing that Venezuelan government is not going to collapse. The situation was not so dramatic, but Chavez was out of Venezuela like for almost a month. And the media was like saying a lot of things here and in Venezuela and the opposition forces, and they were trying to destabilize, but nothing happened. And the government keep moving and running smoothly as always. So I believe that that's a good indicator in terms of that concern that a lot of people have about what's going to happen in Venezuela if Chavez is not there. But I believe that he's still going to be there, if you ask me. But at least it's going to be a good sign. I believe that it might signify this situation, a different analysis from Chavez in terms of finding replacement leaderships in the case he's not going to be able to run the country. Or the important thing is who runs for president. We don't have, I mean, we have an electoral system that is very competitive. And if you can, you have to be very wise in selected who is going to run, because we're having elections in 2012, who is going to run to win the election. Because in the media, they talk a lot about President Chavez's brother, but he do not have the charisma to run for if you ask me.
Next is my comment.
My impression is that the U.S. uses Colombia a lot to stabilize Venezuela. Is that a correct impression, and what's the status?
That happened a lot in recent years. That's true. But Chavez has been changing his approach to Colombia, and I believe that the Colombians has been also changing the approach to Venezuela after election of Santos. And Chavez was very criticized because a couple of decisions that he took of extraditing some progressive people related to FARC that were in Venezuela. And Chavez was very criticized from progressive in Venezuela and outside Venezuela because of that. But according to my perspective and what Chavez said, he do not want to open a new front with the Colombians, at least at this time. That doesn't mean that we believe that the Colombian government is going to be our best friend forever or something like that. I mean, I don't think that. I mean, they have other interests. They have, like, but at least we are trying to keep that front, like, close. And that means that, I mean, before Chavez's illness, I mean, there was a big discussion in Venezuela because of that decision, even among Chavistas, that decision of sending these two Colombians extradited to Colombia.
It sounds like the nationalizations are recent, have recently been bigger, more common. And when I heard that, I said, okay, that's why they hate you, you know, that's why we're being told that Chavez is a mad dictator, you know, oppressing the people. could you tell me, what was the reason that started up the nationalizations? What kind of companies are getting nationalized, and
okay.
why?
We have been nationalizing like the big scope of companies. I believe, I don't share too much your appreciation about that. That's why Chavez has been demonized. I believe that he was even demonized before we started the nationalization process. So I believe that is the way, I mean, Chavez has been demonized because he do not respond to corporate interests. And he started doing that since 99. And that's why they hate him so much, because he do not take decisions because of the interests of corporations. And we have also corporations, U.S. and international, and Venezuelan corporations operating in Venezuela, and they run the country before. That's the truth. And right now, we have a president that is running the country, thinking not only in the interests of corporations. So I believe that that's the first, like, reason. Of course, when you nationalize, you also receive some sort of criticism. But we have been trying to do those nationalizations respecting rules and laws and everything. I mean, we have been paying huge amounts of money that affect us in terms of to those international companies that we have been nationalizing. I mean, we nationalized CanTV, which is a telecommunication company. I believe that Verizon was the one that had the biggest share in CanTV. And that company was, in the 80s, state company. And they privatized it. And they sell it for coins. And they were making a lot of money out of those companies. And they didn't feel the commitments. And the government decided to nationalize it, and we nationalized some iron companies, which is an important sector, production sector in Venezuela, iron and aluminum and heavy enterprises. We nationalized the cement companies, some banks. And the good thing about nationalizations is that I've been seeing that the approach that we are trying to implement is not the maybe some people don't like this, but it's not the Soviet approach in the way that the state control. I mean, we, with those nationalizations, are aiming to transfer those means of production to communal councils through the concept of EPS, Empresas de Producción Social. So, and I really believe that that's true socialism. I mean, I believe that the state should not become like a big corporation, public corporation. I believe that you just have to transfer means of production to the people, and we have been doing things like that. For example, Cantv was nationalized like 2-3 years ago or 4 years ago, and the calling center was like a different company within the company. And that call center was transferred to a communal council, to a comuna in Merida State. And not the whole share because it's a complex company, but I believe that they transferred like 60% of the shares and the control and management of that company to a communal council. And right now, that communal council is the one that runs the call center for Cantv. And the revenues from that operation are going, the 60% of the revenues that belong to the communal councils are going to the communal councils, and they are going to use it to finance housing solutions, hospitals, and streets, and things like that. So I believe that's what socialism really is.
Yes. Let me take one more short question, and I saw Bibi's hand. We'll have to address additional questions afterwards. There is punch and cookies,
okay,
which folks can enjoy with informal conversation.
Yes.
You spoke about 24/7 clinics where the medicine is free.
Mm-hmm.
It's not free. Who pays for it? Not the patient, but who pays?
The government.
The money.
That's part of agreements between Cuba and Colombia, and I believe that that's the way we believe that health and education are the minimums that any government have to provide. We have a lot of things to do. We believe that we don't have the whole social system like built in Venezuela. But we have been changing the way we did things like 10 or 12 years ago.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.